You're listening to WWBC, Cocoa, Merritt Island, Melbourne, Titusville, and the Beaches, 1510 AM, as well as W234BI, Cocoa, Vieira, 94.7 FM, and W264AS, Melbourne, and Palm Bay, 100.7 FM.
Hello, Space and Treasure Coast. This is Sita Bigi on AM 1510 WWBC, FM 94.7, FM 99.9, and FM 100.7. We are also heard on the web at wwbc.com on the on-demand app. And we have an action-packed show today. We're talking kitchen table topics and things that are going on right here in Brevard and around the nation. Ellen Little is here, my co-host, yes, and my friend who helps me behind the scenes. Again, thank you for being here with
thank
me on the
you.
Show.
Thank you. This is going to be a great show today. I hope everybody gets a pen and paper.
Yes.
This is a good one.
We do have a packed studio. We have a good friend and a supporter of our show, Randy Foster from Foster Experts is here. Welcome again. Welcome back.
Thank you, Sita.
And it's going to be a conversation. So everybody knows that Viewpoint with Sita and Friends is a fun, unscripted, very informative, and quite valuable information is spread on this show. And we also have Anthony Colucci. Thank God, it's such an easy name to say. And he is the president of the Brevard Federation of Teachers, and he's here with us. Thank you for being here.
Thank you for having me. I'm very excited. That was some introduction. I'm really looking forward to this.
Yeah, it's a fun show. And we also have Sean. Sean is here. Hello, Sean.
Hello, how are you doing?
Welcome to our show. He's
a friend of
Randy's, and he's here to observe, take pictures, and jump in whenever he can as well. And
absolutely.
Ellen is here as usual.
And he'll probably be doing a little video, right?
Yes.
Yeah, why not?
The show today, yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah, I'm glad I did my hair.
I know. We usually got the outfit for radio.
Yeah. So. Well, you know, we had quite a wonderful weekend. I just flew back in from Philadelphia, and I just want to give a shout out to all the people that we met in Philly. From the Uber drivers to the people in the airport, people in the restaurants, a beautiful city. And I can't believe how much love. It's called the City of Brotherly Love for a reason.
Yeah.
People, everyone was smiling and happy and
loving the stories.
Yeah, I enjoyed the Billie Eilish concert.
Yeah.
I'm so happy that I got to meet her and she was so
and
loving.
It was
and
a
kind.
Lady that was on, her mom was on our show, on the show. Like
yeah.
last year.
Her mom paid it forward.
She did.
Yeah.
Absolutely. And how exciting for your granddaughter and for your daughter.
Yeah. I never thought that I would be in a room with 3,500 screaming teenagers. And I have to tell you, all those teenagers look like they belong in a fashion magazine. So beautiful.
Oh, that's awesome.
And everybody was there to just cheer on and clap and sing and dance and just cheer on for their favorite singer. It was just wonderful.
That's great.
So
that's great. And welcome home. Glad the trip was safe and that you loved Philadelphia, because it is a beautiful city.
As I got off the aircraft and I saw the people who were entering the aircrafts to clean the aircrafts and to take care of the plane so that we can have a ride to and from cities, I don't know if it's just me, but I start thinking to myself, I wonder if these people have health insurance. I wonder if they've been paid an affordable wage. I wonder who's caring for their children. And I said to myself, and I wonder when they're here taking care of us and getting this plane ready, whether it's the mechanics or the janitors or the pilot or the flight attendant or the people who are just keeping us safe, like Randy, who was in Homeland Security as well.
Right.
Yes.
And I wonder about the people working in the airports who are scanning us and getting us on and off the aircraft. Do their children have a proper public school to attend? Do they live in good communities when they go home? And I wonder about this, not just when I'm in the airport, but if I'm driving and I see people on a scaffold painting a building or taking people working on a roof in the hot sun, I tend to say to myself, does these people have health insurance? Mm-hmm. Who's caring for their children? And especially if you see moms working and they're happy and they're smiling at you and giving you 100% of their being in service, because we all know service to God is service to mankind, right?
Right.
And I wonder for those moms who are helping us customers in a service-oriented world, who is caring for their children?
the well, daycare workers. That's the basis of that economic equality, right? That's what we keep talking about and certainly in the Democratic arena, the Democratic socialism arena too, that they're talking a lot about that economic equality.
Right.
Try and make sure that everybody does get a fair wage and has an opportunity to succeed and be successful with their families.
Right. And as I was sitting there, I was thinking about our show today and how wonderful it is that we're doing a show about public education. And respect for teachers, and not just the teachers, but the communities from which our kids come from as well. And so I want to welcome to our show the president of the Brevard Federation of Teachers, Mr. Anthony Colucci. And I'm going to have you introduce yourself to the audience. Instead of me reading off your bio, just tell us a little bit about yourself.
Sure. My name is Anthony Colucci. I'm the president of the Brevard Federation of Teachers. Prior to being the president of the Brevard Federation of Teachers, I served as vice president for 2 years. But my most important job was being a classroom teacher here in Brevard County for 16 years. I taught a gifted student program at Oak Park as well as South Lake Elementary School. I earned a lot of awards and accolades for my teaching, but the joy and really comes from making a difference with kids and their families.
And you do, because you are a voice for the voiceless here in Brevard, so we thank you. But you know, as I was prepping for the show, I came across an article that says that researchers have found that being born affluent but not very bright carries a 7 in 10 chance of someone reaching a high socioeconomic status as an adult. And what the article went on to say that if you're affluent, it doesn't matter what your IQ is, you already have an advantage over everybody else. And this is why it's so important for us to fight for public education, to give an opportunity and a chance to so many people. So tell us a little bit about what should we know about what the Brevard Federation of Teachers is doing to fight for equality for our teachers and our students.
Well, going back to what you were talking about earlier from your trip to Philadelphia about decent wages, health care, child care, good schools, I want to say there's nothing radical about those ideas. Those are union values that we hold dearly, but there's nothing radical about that. This is what the American dream is all about, and this is what everybody should be able to take part in our country. And the Brevard Federation of Teachers, we have a large membership of nearly 2,700 teachers, school counselors, media specialists, JROTC instructors, and so on. But we come from all different walks of life, political beliefs, but we are bonded together by the belief in public education and the belief in organized labor that speaking together, speaking in one voice, that we can make some positive changes here in Brevard County and all over the state and nation.
Yeah, and I don't know if you noticed, Anthony, but I did run for the school board in 2008. I ran in District 3. I didn't win, but I learned a lot. And I met with so many principals and administrators and teachers and students and parents. And, you know, at the end of the day, everybody wants an opportunity for their children. Everybody that I know, that I spoke with, people want their children, when they leave high school, to have the life skills that they need to succeed in life, whether to take a path of going to college or trade or the military, whatever it is, that's all people want. Where did we lose that message in that there's such an assault on public education?
So this has been a 2 decades battle where public education has been under attack. It was an orchestrated plan, and one where they've chipped away at public education year after year, and the only thing that has stood in their way has been our teachers' union has prevented the utmost damage from happening. Fortunately, most folks do support public education. I believe I recently saw that 70% of people believe that teachers deserve more pay. But how this has been framed is to try to make the teacher the good guy and the teachers union the evil doer. The problem is the teachers union is the teachers. So that doesn't go very far when you realize, hey, wait a second, my kid's teacher is in the teacher's union. And we know that people drop off their most valuable asset, the thing that they love the most in the world, into the hands of public educators every single day. So we do know that they trust us and believe in public education.
It makes no sense. I mean, who plans to gain from an uneducated society? Is it the people that see what's going on from the high school to prison pipeline? I mean, who tends to gain? I don't understand why certain people are pushing back on funding public education, paying the teachers what they're worth, and paying attention to what's going on in our schools. I mean, we all know if you're educated, that it's going to be a better society, right? Mm-hmm. That's how it should be. Don't you think, Randy, that's how it should be? You went to public school.
Yes, I totally agree. The more educated the youth are, the better off society will be. You know, I also was a juvenile detention officer when I first came to Brevard County in Cocoa. And I saw what an education is, a poor educated student.
Right.
It could become.
Yeah, no nation should compromise on education and healthcare. Those are the two pillars of any society, right? But Anthony, getting back to this, the subject we're talking about with public education, compared to other states, how well or poorly is our state, the state of Florida, funding public education?
So Florida,
like,
is,
my grandchild says, Florida.
Right. That may be accurate when it comes to funding.
Duh.
So we are 43rd in the nation in per capita student funding, and we are 46th in the nation when it comes to teachers' pay. So when we're looking at per student funding or teachers' pay, we're behind states like Alabama, Georgia, and South Carolina. It's not the Pennsylvanias. It's not the New Yorks or Massachusetts anymore. These are our neighboring states, and our state legislature is failing to fund our public schools. There are various reasons why that could be occurring. There's a lot of profit in private schools and in charter schools, and it's been exposed that some of these folks making the laws are actually or making money themselves off of these schools or their family members.
Yeah, they probably own the buildings, or maybe they're leasing it, whatever it is.
Yeah, because there's like five different types of schools, right? There's public, parochial, magnet,
charter.
Right? Charter. What's the other one?
I'm not sure.
I thought there was another one.
There are like five.
And like
six.
Three of them are private, right? Privately funded?
Well, voucher schools, magnet schools and charter schools are publicly funded.
Okay.
Well, you know, the thing is, the school board, the Brevard County School Board, believes that it's doing everything to improve teacher salaries. Do you agree with this assessment or disagree? Because we're all reading the Florida Today, and every single day there's something about the school board, the BFT, the teachers, the students, and it's like the teachers are caught in the middle.
We are the third most experienced workforce in the state of Florida. Our teachers in Brevard have almost 14 years of experience. We are 30th in the state in average teacher pay. We are $2,170 below the state average. Something is very wrong with that. They are not doing everything that they can in order to fix this problem. Recently, we had the special magistrate make a decision on our proposals, and he recommended that the school board accepts the union's proposals on salary. And in that, he noted that it was in the best interest of students to accept the union's proposals. He also noted that the school district is underutilizing public funds that are meant to go towards the education of children. Instead, they are padding their budget with those funds. It's very disconcerting.
Yeah, because I read recently where teachers have to take up a second job in order to make ends meet. I mean, if you figure by the time you pay your mortgage or rent, car payment, car insurance, put food on the table, buy supplies for your classroom sometimes, I mean, they don't make enough to live. So, and I know we had a lot of people that went to rally in Tallahassee for this issue in the past legislative session. Did you all get a hearing with anyone there?
Well, the state made some progress with funding this year. They increased the funding in the base student allocation by $75 per student, which is much better than the 47 cents they did last year, but it is still a long way to go to catch up to the national average.
Yeah, and I know that there was a lot of discussions and concerns with Senate Bill 7070, the voucher bill. Now, I know, like, I have four children, and my four children went to public schools and public universities. Now, if I wanted my child to go to a private school, I would have to work a second job and use that salary to send my child to a private school. I don't understand how the taxpayers' dollars are being used to send children to private schools. I have nothing against private school, parochial schools, whatever kind of school people want, but I just find it's unfair to take the funds that we pay taxes for, that we want our money to go to a designated community school for children and parents and that community. When you take the funds out of public school in the community and you put it into an already existing private school that's in a great neighborhood, you're really hurting public education. So talk a little bit about that Senate bill and the voucher system.
We're not funding public education. So I don't understand how the legislature thinks they're now going to start funding private education. The biggest issue here is this is not a research-based proposal. There's not a plethora of research that says private schools are outperforming public schools. We need to get kids into these private schools. It simply doesn't exist. In reality, we've found out that 76% of students who take vouchers return back to their public schools within 3 years, and they are further behind than when they left. These schools are completely unaccountable to the public. There's not even a way to measure students' success compared to the public schools. They're not even taking the same tests that our public school students are taking. Their teachers might be uncertified. And also, I've learned that there's a question at some of these schools if when students graduate, if they will even be accepted into universities, because these schools did not have the credentials that are needed to establish.
Meet the criteria, yeah. But the thing is, and by the time the students figure out that they don't fit in that public-private school, the school has already pocketed all that voucher money that should have. So it is, they have made it a business. They've made it a business, whereas public education is not a business. It is about educating our children. I take offense to that a lot. I don't know about you, Ellen, but absolutely. I just think it's totally unfair.
Well, that's why I'm always confused as to why we have so many choices of schools. I mean, it should be public or parochial, basically.
Right, and
And you pay for what you have to pay for. But most of everybody, every neighborhood I ever grew up in, we all went to public school. You know, I mean, or your parents made the choice to send you to a parochial school.
Well, one of the things when I talk to, I have a lot of friends whose children attend private schools, and most of them pay for it. I'm not sure now. I'm hearing a lot of rich people get these vouchers too, which is to me like a crime, because if you make $500,000, $250,000, whatever it is, you should not be getting those vouchers. But is it true, Anthony, that those people can now get the vouchers too, on top of making that much money?
It's my understanding that with the new bill, a family of four who makes up to $96,000 will qualify for these vouchers. So whether or not you consider that rich, that's a lot of money. That's over twice what my average
salary is.
And, you know, I also did want to note that one of the concerns with these voucher programs and private schools is they're not obligated to take every student like a public school does. They're not obligated to take students who have severe learning disabilities or students with physical.
They take cream of the crop, basically.
And that's also why sometimes
it's like some nursing homes. They take cream of the crop patients, too.
Seems like they're excelling. And also they've been known to kick students who have discipline problems out, where the public schools have very little opportunity or avenues to deal with severe discipline problems. If you know, don't behave in a private school, they just give you the boot. Public school needs to make it work.
Right. Well, you know, I spoke with a few of my friends whose kids attend private schools, and they said, oh, we like it so much better because the class size is small and a lot of the parents are involved. They volunteer. They have so many opportunities to be with their children. Well, don't you think the listening public who's listening to Viewpoint with Sita and Friends today, don't you think every parent want that opportunity to volunteer in their child's school? But They're not being paid an affordable wage.
Right.
They don't live in a community that supports that. Mm-hmm. So why not, if that's the case, and the private school size class is a smaller, why not take the money that we, the taxpayers, are paying for public education and make our public schools, like the private schools, smaller class size, pay teachers what they're worth, and pay attention to what these people are saying. If you're taking your kids out of a school because of that, don't you agree that maybe they should be start looking at why people leave the public school and take a voucher and go to a private school?
We firmly believe that regardless of zip code, every student should have a great school. It's that easy. You know, whether it's Beachside or here in Cocoa, every school needs to be top notch. There should be no reason why one school is in so much better shape, has so much more to offer than other schools.
Right. The value should be placed on all the children, mm-hmm. no matter where they come from.
And that was
right?
that was the mass exodus a few years ago, right? There was like 600 teachers that had left at one point. I think it was like in one school year. Am I misquoting? It was a large number. And then when the class, of course, when all the teachers left, that's when the class sizes seemed to get like really stretched because they had to get more children and less teachers, that ratio, right? And what's the number? 35 is the for the class size?
The class size is a constitutional amendment,
right,
that has been manipulated by the state legislature to reduce its positive impact on schools. Anybody who's been in a classroom teacher knows that small classrooms help you to give more individual attention to students. So it depends on the grade level. Like up to third grade is like 18 students, like fourth through sixth, I believe, is 22, and or fourth through eighth, and then high school is like 25. But they've really stripped away the power of that and have done different things, looking at school-wide averages rather than each class, in order to not let that amendment reach its full potential. And it's been 625 teachers that have left Brevard County over the last 3 years. And not a day goes by where I'm not getting a call from another teacher saying, I've had it.
Well, they're frustrated. And you know, it is a two-way street. When our children went to public school, which I am an advocate for public school, we did our part at home. Because we were parents who cared about our children, put value on their lives. We watched their friends. We knew where they were going. We met with the teachers. You know, so many teachers in public schools, they prepare their classroom. And they wait for that one day when the parents are going to come in to see the progress of their child. And so many of these teachers, the parents don't show up. The grandparents don't show up. And it speaks to a larger problem in our society, the socioeconomic part of it. So many parents have to work two jobs. And, you know, all these people that, you know, they're so excited when someone has a baby, they're pregnant, they're happy about the child. When the child is born, it needs an education, it needs healthcare, it needs a safe place to live. Why is it that the teachers are getting so frustrated? Because there's the lack of discipline at home.
We love our students. We understand that our students are coming to us from difficult circumstances. The problem is we are teachers. We are not social workers. We are not security guards. We are not psychologists. We need those folks in our schools doing those jobs.
That's right. A lot of schools don't even have enough social workers to address those issues with the children who are coming in. And we heard recently how many of the students are going home and they're hungry.
Yeah.
How
yeah.
can you study at school if you have if you're hungry? How can you compare the children in certain public schools to a private school if those kids in those schools have smaller classes, They're affluent, some of them. They have two parents or maybe other people involved to guide and teach them. It's so unfair. So how can our listening audience help? What can we do to support the Brevard Federation of Teachers?
We are hoping to see a large portion of our community at the school board building on Monday, June 24th. We are rallying at 8 a.m. prior to our legislative hearing, which starts at 9. Come out there wearing a red shirt. Let the school board know that teacher pay matters, that we need to keep our teachers here in Brevard. We need to attract quality teachers here and stop the mass exodus of teachers from Brevard County. The school board needs to understand that this is coming from more than just the teachers. It's coming from parents and students. And as you might have seen on last week, we had a student-led march where they brought 300 students and parents to the front entrance of the school board building demanding higher pay for teachers.
Yeah, a friend of mine said, well, you know, the children, they had that march. And I said, well, you know, if we had a system in our country where parents didn't have to worry about health insurance, you'll see more parents in those public schools helping. If we had a situation where parents didn't have to worry about putting food on the table and picking between medication and paying rent, some of them can't even afford rent. In a decent place, a two-bedroom apartment is $1,200. You know, just how they're saying that there's smaller class sizes in the private school, you would see more parents in our public schools paying attention to their children, their communities, the environment in which they live in, and helping our teachers. So my call to action is for all the legislators who can send their children to private schools and smaller class sizes. Guess what? Just like you value your child's life, we value every single child's life in Brevard County and in the United States as well. And we want to fix public education. But with the remaining few minutes, can you give us the website for the Brevard Federation of Teachers? And do you partner up with anyone that we can help in the community to help you all?
Sure. Our website is bftteach.org. We have a widely followed Facebook page, Brevard Federation of Teachers. We'd love to have you on that page, following all the latest news. We partner with anyone who cares about public education. So if you are one of these folks who has an interest in helping public education, give me a call. 321-636-3323, and we'll talk about what else you can do to help us out.
Okay, well, and we're sharing all of this on our Facebook page, so make sure you go to CETA Media Inc., and you'll see all of the website and certainly the rally for Monday the 24th, I believe it is. We will put that on our webpage as well. But we're going to hear from our sponsors really quickly, and then we'll be right back with Viewpoint with CETA and Friends right after these messages with Randy Foster.
Family of CETA McGee, author of 18 Brothers and Sisters and founder of Simply CETA Skincare, and these great sponsors. Portions of CETA and Friends is brought to you by Cloud 9 Mattress and Furniture Store inside the Merritt Square Mall at the Sears Wing. Save big on furniture working with a flexible family-owned store with all the brands you love, from Ashley, Serta, Coaster, Enso, and more. Brand new, warranties as well, and delivery and haul-away available at a fraction of the cost of most stores and delivered in 7 to 10 days. Free no-credit checking and financing and free interior design. The owner, Scott Palmer, has been in the mattress and furniture business for over 30 years, and Cloud 9 has been serving Central Florida for 7 years now. Cloud 9 Mattress and Furniture Store, available at 321-459-2473. Again, call them 321-459-2473 or visit them on the web at cloud9furniture.com. When you need medical care and need it fast, MedFast Urgent Care is faster and less expensive than emergency rooms. MedFast is open 7 days a week, now with 8 locations serving Brevard County. So if you have an emergency, need a physical, or when your doctor is unavailable, with 8 locations, MedFast offers top quality care that is close by and the number is easy to remember. That is 321 MedFast. You just call 321 MedFast. No one wants to wait in an emergency room for hours and get even sicker when you get the high bill. What you want is medical care fast. That's why you call MedFast, where most patients are seen and treated in less than an hour. MedFast Urgent Care opens 7 days a week with the convenience of 8 locations serving Brevard County. So when you need medical care fast, call 321-MEDFAST. MedFast. Located in Titusville, Florida, Dixie Crossroads has been serving great-tasting seafood, char-grilled steaks, prime rib, chicken, fresh salads, and their famous corn fritters for over 31 years. The menu features the very best local shrimp and fish from Port Canaveral and ranges from low-cost sandwiches and baskets to high-end seafood combos. Visit this Florida favorite at 1475 Garden Street in Titusville. That's Dixie Crossroads, 321-268-5000. 321-268-5000, or visit them on the web at dixiecrossroads.com. Jotkoff Financial Group is a certified public accounting and a registered investment advisory firm with over 30 years of productive relationships with clients. Jotkoff Financial Group can assist you in meeting your accounting, tax, and business consulting and financial planning and insurance needs without expanding your internal workforce. With 3 locations here in Florida, here in Brevard County, Broward County, and Nassau County, contact Jotkoff Financial Group here in Brevard at 321-984-7345, located at 1122 South Wickham Road in Melbourne. That's Jotkoff Financial Group. On the web, you'll find them at www.jotkoff, that's JOTKOFF.com. Call the professionals at Jotkoff Financial Group today.
At least you remember. Welcome back, dear listeners. This is Sita Begee on Viewpoint with Sita and Friends. We had a really robust first half hour with Anthony Coluccio. I like that name. So easy to say. We talked about the Brevard Federation of Teachers and how we can help our teachers in classroom size and public education and all the great things. And now our second segment is with our very good friend, Randy Foster. Randy is a retired supervisory deputy U.S. Marshal. He has over 25 years of experience on the federal, state, and local levels of law enforcement. He has always been a supporter of Viewpoint with Sita and Friends, and we love when he's on. And today, we're talking about something that is so disturbing, the abuse of power. And I think Randy is going to talk a little bit about that in a minute. So, Randy, but first, before we go to that topic, just tell our listeners a little bit more about yourself.
Yes, I'm a retired supervisor, deputy U.S. Marshal. Also, I've been a police officer in North Carolina and a federal air marshal. I done protection with Supreme Court justices. I actually arrested numerous of America's Most Wanted fugitives. But my passion is law enforcement. I love law enforcement. I'm a big supporter of law enforcement. The problem is I don't like bad law enforcement officers. I don't like officers that abuse their power. And one thing about the police department, every police department have one section. It's common, whether it's large or small. It's called internal affairs. And there's a reason why we have that internal affairs department, to weed out bad cops or misconduct. What I do now, I have my own business. It's called Foster Expert. I'm a law enforcement expert witness. And I assist attorneys across the country with civil rights cases, criminal defense cases, police brutality cases. And I also do a lot of consulting.
Yeah. Well, you sent me that video, that disturbing video out of Phoenix, Arizona. The police officer aiming a gun, yelling and screaming obscenities and threatening parents of a 4-year-old child who apparently took a doll from a store.
Right, Dollar General.
Dollar General. And then this morning, CNN carried that video as well. And I tell you what, I broke down and I cried because I don't think any child anywhere in the world and parents should be treated as such.
I agree totally. And I send you a lot of videos, Sita.
Yeah.
And that
every one of them is disturbing, we have to say.
It is. And I've seen a lot more videos and I experienced as an expert witness more disturbing than that. But that's an example of excessive use of force. Use of force, an officer don't have to put their hands on you to use of force. And that's a good example of how the inappropriate use of force got totally out of hand by these officers. But when you point a gun at someone, that person who you pointing that gun should be a threat to your life. And apparently there wasn't a threat there.
Yeah, how can a four-year-old with a doll be a threat to someone, right?
Well, or a pregnant woman holding a baby. Right. How is she going to be a threat?
Well, they're suing, and I hope they get the $10 million. That kid can get a lot of dollies with that $10
million. And the thing that makes me crazy, too, is a lot of times these cases will come out, and you know this probably just as well, is that the other officers that are in that same division will say, yeah, they were loaded, you know, they were not right or something like that. There was always something beforehand, but then there was nothing in their record or in their employment record that said that they were bad or that they had misuse or misconduct before, which is always makes me crazy because it's like somewhere along the line somebody should have said something. You know, we're trying to use that phrase here in the United States, right? If you see something, say something. And in our own judicial system, we're having things going on right now that
It boils down to respect for the law and respect for the citizens.
Right.
We all agree if a police officer tells you, come out of the car, put your hands up, we do it. But what he's saying is that was excessive with a family and children, you know, looking
on. And all
I'm
saying is that there are other law enforcement folks that are probably around that officer that probably saw that behavior before and should have said something.
Exactly.
Should have calmed them down, should have gotten them some help, should have gotten them maybe a couple of days off.
Of that is swept under the rug as well.
Yeah, well, it's called a blue line. A police officer shouldn't talk badly or report another officer. I didn't believe that when I was a supervisor, deputy marshal. I had to discipline some of the guys that that worked for me. When they did something wrong, I turned them to internal affairs or written them up. And I didn't get no pleasure out of doing that, but I took responsibility of their action because they worked for me. And There's still that blue line there, but here's what I find as an expert witness is also disturbing. An incident like that, if the officers would have charged that couple, they wasn't charged, and they started building a story, a negative story about the couple that other items was taken.
A smear campaign.
Right, a smear campaign. I don't care how many items was taken. It's a misdemeanor.
Right.
It wasn't a threat to the officer. And the officer pulled their guns out and point it at somebody. And it takes, how many pounds of pressure to pull a trigger?
Not a lot.
Especially when you're amped up like that officer was.
Well, think about the mental impact of this on those children as well.
Yes.
They're damaged for the rest of their lives, if you ask me, seeing something like that. And the Phoenix police chiefs called the arrest very unsettling, extremely unsettling. But more importantly, police killed 1,147 people in 2017. Black people were 25% of those killed, despite being only 13% of the population. Why? I mean, we thank God for social media and Facebook. We are seeing these arrests and these stops, and it's almost like, let's be real. We can't change who we are, where we were born, the color of our skin and our race. What can we do to protect ourselves anymore?
Well, I could speak to this. I believe most police shootings I don't believe it's racial. This is coming from a black male, but black people don't trust the police. Mm-hmm. I police black areas when I was a cop, and they don't trust them. And there's a reason why. It's the history. Some of these shootings are racial, I believe, and it becomes where the person was a threat to the officer. I'm going to tell you, I've developed a threat assessment. It's called the Police Subject Threat Assessment Encounter Form. And that's based off my experience. It's based off my expert witness experience. It's based off my training, and it's based off case law. And that form determines whether a person was a threat to the officer or not. That form could be used in a case like Phoenix. It would determine where if the person was a threat. If the person is a threat, then deadly force can be used. If the person is not a threat, then no deadly force could be used.
But don't the police officers have that type of training before they're allowed to carry a gun? I would think if you just like nursing, when you go to nursing school, you learn how to give shots, you learn how to assess a situation, triage, you know what to do, details of your job description. A teacher does the same thing, a physician, but a law enforcement officer, you're carrying a gun. Don't you think that they should have some sort of a training not to get angry, be more mindful of people, maybe community policing, whatever it takes? They take all these things into consideration before they give someone a gun?
Well, they do have that training. And when I was a police officer, there's a difference between a marshal and a police officer. When I was a police officer, even when I became a marshal, we got a training we called verbal judo. If you know judo, the martial arts, flipping somebody, disarming them. But now it went from verbal judo to de-escalation. And de-escalation is not a law, it's not a statute, but an officer should de-escalate the situation in light of going to the next level of use of force. Now, there was no de-escalation in that video.
No.
The person who was escalating the violence was the officer.
The language. I mean, all of a sudden, I never thought that I would live in a world where there's so much hatred and division and racist comments. And now you're seeing it from the people who are supposed to protect and serve.
Yeah, but I want to make...
And it's not fair. It's not fair. Not all the officers are like that.
Yeah, yes.
There's just a few are like that. But those few bad apples, they paint a bad picture. It's almost like Ellen was saying, maybe they need to take a week off and think about what they're doing.
It's a
tough job.
It is a tough job.
It is really a tough job.
You know, I've been shot at twice in my law enforcement career, and I never shot nobody. I've been shot. The person who shot at me was less than 4 feet, and I had an opportunity to shoot him as he ran past me in the back, and I felt I wasn't justified.
My father was a police. I understand, but he lived in a different time when people respected human life. They respected their families. They respected the communities. I think it all goes back to all of us have to be the top cop in our homes. You have to know what's going on in your home in order to fix what's going on the outside. That's sometimes I think that is so true. But Randy, do you think we are talking enough about mental illness? Because oftentimes a lot of these stops are made and the person, something is wrong.
We are going to have a serious problem with mental illness with veterans coming back from this long, crazy Afghanistan in war and Iraq. And a lot of veterans are taking their lives. And a lot of officers are dealing with veterans who have guns.
Yeah.
Okay. Nothing wrong with having a gun. But if you have a gun and you're a veteran and you have some PTSD, that's a recipe for disaster. And officers are not trained to deal with that.
Yeah.
And that's going to be you're going to see more and more. And I would like to see a statistic done by the Department of Justice on that.
Well, but de-escalation takes a whole new light when you're dealing with
Well, you
with
need
that
a voice like Randy's.
Yes. Right.
Look at his, he's so calm.
Yeah.
He really should be teaching some of these police officers how to calm down. I mean, not all of them are bad, but there are situations where you need somebody to be like this.
The problem is, Sita, they wouldn't listen to me if I was in front of them. Here's the thing. Social media has become integrated in American lives. It's all over. There's so many social media websites out there. And when you put a video like this, it's good in one sense that it shows the bad things that could happen, and everybody needs to be aware of that and need to learn from that video. But in the flip side of it, a lot of young people are shying away from law enforcement. Police departments across the country has a hard time recruiting women and men in law enforcement. And it is, every, even in this county, they have a hard time getting the proper people. Passing a background goes to education, like we talked about. The use of drugs and such other. So it's social media has shied away a lot of young people from going in law enforcement because they don't want to be on a video like we saw. They don't want to be shamed for life, really.
Yeah.
Look at the shooting in Parkland High School. That
the officer. No, yeah. They're going to charge the officer.
They're going to charge that officer for not doing his job.
And you know what? You just deterred hundreds of people from joining the force. It used to be that teaching and police officers were two of the professions that everybody wanted. And now they don't. And I think we need cooler heads to prevail and say why. I mean, in some communities, we do need the police officers to come from within that community.
Yes. Yes.
Because when you know your community, you know there's certain things that are acceptable in a community. You catch a fella with a joint. So what? Let him go.
Right.
You're not going to lock him up for one joint.
Right.
He's got a plant. All right. Kill the plant. Let's move on. You're not going to lock him up because when you lock him up, he cannot feed his family. He cannot volunteer in his child's school. He's not there to do homework. Mm-hmm. While there are people in the corporate offices sitting down, they're scamming millions of dollars easily. Mm-hmm. But yet still, you're going to go off. So I think it's very important to have people from within that community police that community.
Well, it's the same thing. I remember the police officers in our town. We knew everybody's name. You know, they knew everybody because they grew up in our town. You know, so it was like everybody knew, you know, Charlie, and, you know, it was like everybody was on a first name basis.
Even teachers. You had teachers who taught your sisters and brothers and everybody in a whole family.
I've lived where I've lived for 25 years. I know two police officers by name.
Yeah, because
the entire community.
Back in the 70s and the 80s, law enforcement, I mean, we had police brutality back then. I could tell you some stories.
We just didn't have social media.
We didn't have social media putting right. it
What happens to grown men? What happens to grown men and women that once they get a title, some of them become so difficult?
Yes.
I mean, is it the title, the power of the badge, the power of the uniform, the power of the gun? What is it that makes a human being who's supposed to be mindful and humble and kind to others makes him such a beast?
I can speak to that. You have, I call it wannabe cops. People that want to be officers for the wrong reasons. And they're not a criminal such, but they fantasize and a lot of stuff comes off TV. I call them Hollywood cops. They think what you see on TV is reality when it comes to law enforcement, which is far from the truth. The closest thing that you're going to get to reality in law enforcement is the FBI files or the TV show called Cops. That's what law enforcement is all about. But these
SVU,
forensic
crime story, forensic files.
They want to be like Miami Vice,
right?
Right.
I don't want to name the old school TV show like T.J. Hooker.
Sasuke and Hutch.
Hawaii 5-0. It's how old I am, but but that's I call them Hollywood cops, and they want a badge and gun that gives them authority
and power,
and they can abuse that authority. The only person in the world, the only person in the country could take away your life is a law enforcement officer. They have the authority to take you out.
And with Florida and the Stand Your Ground law, that's a whole different ball game. Because you could shoot people and say, well, I thought he had Skittles in his pocket, or he had, you know, something rattling in there.
The Stand Your Ground law wasn't meant for law enforcement officer. It was meant for civilian. But now it's flipped. Law enforcement could use Stand Your Ground. Law enforcement do not need to use that law.
That's right.
Because their job, and they have the authority to use of force when their lives are threatened, when someone else's lives are threatened. Right. And they protect it. They call it qualified immunity, which is crazy. They could kill you and not be sued.
Yeah, like the guy the police officer from Satellite Beach who shot the fella for loud music in a gas station. Remember that case?
Yes.
Well, and that was a civilian too, right? I mean,
but he was a police officer.
He was
officer.
A police officer, but he was off duty. Well, it's the same thing, the road rage that happened in Palm Bay.
Doesn't matter if you're off duty, on duty. Yeah. Show some respect for human life, for God's sake.
Going back to the doll incident, there shouldn't be anybody who gets a gun drawn on them because they stole something. You know, going back to your point, it's...
Well, no, if you stole something and you have a gun and you're pointing it at the officer, he has a right to defend himself.
Right. But
in this case, I agree, not all the police officers are bad.
How is a pregnant woman with a baby in her arm is a threat to an officer?
Right. None.
Right. So that brings us to the other point where now we have the abuse of power with these sanctuary cities in the state of Florida. We just saw where... The governor signed a bill for that. But we don't really have a sanctuary city in Florida.
Well,
why are all these people making up all these things to scare the public, Randy?
That bill is going to create more problems for illegal immigrants in this state because they're not going to report crimes that happened to them. I know it has something to do with an illegal immigrant who's committed a crime and... then he's allowing the sheriff and local government to cooperate with Homeland Security, ICE. But that is not constitutional. There's a program that ICE has, Immigration and Customs Enforcement, short for ICE. It's called the 287 program. And that program deputized local sheriff to... enforce or assist ICE in what you call their retainer, enforcing their detainer so the ICE officer could come and pick up the illegal. Okay? That's the only way a local police officer or a local sheriff can enforce immigration law. But this bill doesn't overshadow a federal act. So it is illegal for the state of Florida or any officer to question someone on their immigration status. Somebody could walk up to me and say, Randy, were you born here? What's your status?
If you don't have your driver's license or your passport or your birth certificate with you? They're just going to take you down? The way things are going is just abuse of power, like from the top to the bottom.
Well, we already started with the driver license. If you look on your driver license, there's a little star up there. Mm-hmm. When you go through Homeland Security at the airport, that's what they're checking. They're checking that little star to see that it's a valid license. And that is an identification check to see if you are a U.S. citizen or not.
Right.
And it's not every state that has to adopt that. And it's really taking away our freedom.
But you know, this whole, I know you had said you wanted to talk about the sanctuary cities. That's why I brought it up. But the thing is, that in itself is scaring people to death. Because if you are abused by someone and you're in this country and you don't have your papers, whatever, you know, your green card or a permit to work or some sort of a visa, you're not going to call law enforcement, Randy. Women are going to get raped. They're going to be beaten. Children are going to be hurt, and people are just going to sit silently because they're so too scared to call 911. What can we as human beings do to assist that this does not happen?
I wish I had the answer. If you know someone, reach out to that person, whether they're illegal or not. I believe that this whole country is a sanctuary. We live in a sanctuary country because the only person who can enforce immigration law are federal officers.
Right.
Not your local police, not your sheriff department.
Well, we're all seeing like what's happening on the southern border, right? And you see them, these children in these cages, whatever you want to call them. We see them, the parents are separated. And now they're saying the children are going to be adopted by Americans. And I wrote on Facebook this morning, I said, you know, for a fraction of the cost to house these children and feed them, and then the cost that the foster families are receiving as well, the amount of money, why not take these families, put them together, send them back to their country, have an international fund set up? You know what 100 U.S. could do per month in Peru?
Oh, yeah.
You know what 100 or 200 U.S. could do in Ecuador? If you're going to feed the children in a cage and give them diapers and food and have a social worker take care of them and whatever, why not send them back as a family unit in their own country and have a foreign policy reflect an international policy that helps the people in their own lands?
But we would save the taxpayers a lot of money if we just provide aid to these countries.
Yes.
It's cheaper to provide aid than have someone illegal to come in our country and live here.
Yeah, because we're all watching. They're saying now so many companies have the contracts for these children to take care of them in these cages or to take care of the parents in the detention centers, right? So here's the thing. If someone is profiting off of human beings who happen to be just be, their parents just happen to have sex on a piece of property in a land somewhere that they were born. You're 9 months and you're born in a different country. And all of a sudden now you're on the border, you're trying to come in. I agree with you. Why aren't we having more cooler heads prevail that says, help the people in their own lands?
Yeah, well, I just want to make the public aware that once you step foot in this country, the Constitution applies to you. Everybody has the same rights, and it's called the 14th Amendment, due process. And you should read it. It's a very important. We talk about the Second Amendment a lot, but the 14th Amendment applies to everyone.
So where did this term, we have a minute left, where did this sanctuary city term come from? And then it was all over the media to scare people to death. Well, sanctuary itself means something, doesn't it?
Well, I think is, you know, the local government are not going to report their undocumented people. New York City is a sanctuary city. You know what New York City does? They issue identification cards to anybody who wants it.
That's right.
For free.
Yeah, fact.
As a matter of fact, they're going to give free education for anybody who wants to go to college. So that means if the state of New York could pay for it and educate.
Does people actually believe when they say, be thy brother's keeper in thoughts, words, and action? Do they actually believe that they're talking about each other and other humans? My husband just read something, you know, he's in medical profession, and he says, you know, the DNA of humans, no matter the color of the skin, is the same.
Yes.
100% the same. So why is it that man creates such borders? Because when you go to heaven, there ain't no section for who's black, who's white, who's an immigrant, who's a non-immigrant, who's yellow. There isn't. So why, when you die, they say, rest in peace. Why can't we all live in peace too and do what's right? No one is saying to bring everybody into this country. A lot of us are saying, let them apply for asylum. And if they are granted asylum, they should stay. And if not, send them back as a family with dignity and respect. And that same $1,200 a month you're going to give to a foster family to take care of that child, put it into an international fund and take care of people in their own lands. So give us the website one more time for Foster Experts.
FosterExpert.com, FosterExpert.com, and you'll learn more about what I do.
And we'll be right back after next Monday here on Viewpoint with Sita and Friends.
So we want to thank Anthony Colucci for coming on and Randy Foster. Thank you.
This is the Christian Voice of Brevard on WWBC 1510 AM.